I've got something you need to check out. Now, there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs, and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now, there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's clickup.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you on this Monday, January 26th, 2026. Now, I know it's been a while since you've heard my voice, been off for the past couple weeks. But guess what? I am ready to hit the ground running, be back here with you, answer your finance and investment questions as we start to think about the end of the first month of the new year. And certainly there has been a lot over the past 3 weeks that is likely to shape markets moving forward. And so we here at InvestTalk think, we hope, that each and every day we make one step towards accomplishing our mission to help make you a better, more informed investor. As always, we'll have a mixture of educational and actionable material to go over today. But you have a key role in this show as well. Through your finance and investment questions, you help steer our conversation. Now, just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
I'm calling from Massachusetts. I love the show and thank you for all you do. I'm wondering if you could look at the ticker symbol MOS, that's the Mosaic company. I like the fertilizers field and I think that's a nice safe area to be in right now. If you give me your opinion on the stock, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. Bye.
Ticker MOS is the Mosaic company. It is a major U.S.-based fertilizer producer. So what they do is they focus on phosphate and potash crop nutrients that are used in agriculture across the globe. In fact, it's one of the largest supplier of these essential fertilizers over not just the U.S., but internationally as well. Now, valuation looks to be relatively low compared to the industry as a whole, and certainly, you know, a bit lower than their high over the past 5 years. Price to forward-looking earnings sitting at about 12.3. The average is 9, the high is 17.9, so certainly a bit below that average. Over the past 5 years, revenue has been, well, it's been all over the place. If you ignore the annual number, what you'll see is that revenue has grown by 4.5% on an annual basis. It had about $8.6 billion in revenue in 2020. Its peak revenue over the past 5 years was in 2022 when it was 19.1, and it has fallen all the way down to 11.1 last year, projected to have been about 12.1 going into December of 2025, and then grow further to $12.5 billion the next year. Now, what has really driven this company's price that, frankly, since 2023 has underperformed is less having to do with this company specifically. You know, it is a mid-cap company, about $11 billion market cap, not too much debt. Doesn't have a balance sheet that is worrisome in a way. But I mean, in 2023, it was down 42%, down 54% the next year, down 18% the year after that. Now it's up about 16.1%, coming off of really some lows going back all the way to 2020. And so what's driven that? Well, bit of investor positioning, yes. Recent quarterly earnings have beat. There's been improving margins, so that has sustained the optimism. The long-term price correlation really has been because of the global fertilizer demand. There is demand that has picked up a bit, meaning that there can be possibly higher pricing expectations in the near term. And so it really hasn't been able to escape the larger global trend. Now, momentum has shifted. Even though over the past 3 months they're down 5.5%, it's up 17.6% year to date. That's only in 26 trading days. Is this a bigger shift that could lead to better price action, better pricing? Maybe. I mean, this is more of an expectations game here. You have higher level expectations than they've had in quite some time. It's down 1.6% today. Let's see if we can break out of this trend more sustainably before you start to allocate. That is the Mosaic Company, ticker MOS. Thanks for the call. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and we have a lot to talk about as well. The first thing we got is our main focus point, which concerns the silver industrial boom. Understandably, gold is getting the headline attention, but silver is quietly surging due to its industrial demand from solar panels and electronics. So we'll talk a little bit about the supply crunch that may be facing this metal in 2026. Debt, 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 and how the world economy is hooked upon it, specifically government debt, is something we'll be talking about as well. So those are the reasons why gold's prices has absolutely surged recently, above $5,000 an ounce. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on U.S. investment grade credit spreads and how it's reaching its lowest level this century. We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on Aon Inc. and another on Graco Inc., ticker GGG, as well as some questions that came in from the comments section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because when we get back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
If you're ready to get serious with your investment portfolio, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero of KPP Financial are ready to help. Have you heard about parallel investing? That's where the firm's principals invest their own money in the exact same investment programs at the same price and percentages as their clients. Parallel investing differentiates KPP Financial because it aligns the interests of KPP principals with those of their clients, as they each share the same risks and potential for success. Learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Just click on Portfolio Review. The InvestTalk phone lines are open, waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART. '24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through to me live sometime before this show's over, or if you just have a burning question that you can't wait to get answered any time of day. But before we get some more questions, let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks mostly higher. Overall, the Dow was up 64 basis points, S&P 500 up 50, NASDAQ was up 4.43%, and the Russell 2000 down the opposite way, 36 basis points. Breaking down a little bit further, big tech a little higher, the upside driven primarily by Apple's performance. Other outperformers included networking and communication names, software, semi-caps, refiners, equipment and investment banks. Underperformers included defensives, managed care, A&D, steel, and chemicals. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit firmer. You did see some flattening across the curve. Yields down anywhere from 2 to 3 basis points, primarily focused on the long end. While the dollar index was off 60 basis points, a bit off of its worst levels, but still its weakest close in 4 months. The big FX story, though, the yen, very strong. Amid some chatter on Wall Street that perhaps there's some intervention on the way. And with all this, gold surging once again, finished up 2.1%, pushed above that $5,000 an ounce level. Silver, which we'll talk a little bit about later on, settled up 14%, logging its best single session since 1985. March of 1985, that is. Overall, stocks were higher. There was really no shortage of headline volatility. To start the week, you had headlines around trade leaning hawkish with the president threatening 100% tariff on Canada. You have reports that European Union is a bit unsure how to move ahead with U.S. trade deals after the continued confrontation around Greenland. You had rising odds of a government shutdown back in focus after a number of Senate Democrats said they would pull support over DHS funding ahead of the Friday deadline. But at the same time, right, you have upside that continues to be driven by a resilient macro narrative, by better positioning, by more reasonable valuations than we've seen in a bit, by broadening trade, and most importantly, by still strong earnings despite deceleration from the prior 2 quarters. On the economic calendar, preliminary November durable goods orders rose 5.3% month over month on the headline, ahead of the street's expectations for about 3 to 4%, and certainly more than reversing October's 2.2% decline. And core capital goods orders up 70 basis points ahead of the 20 basis point consensus and the prior number of 50 basis points. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, it looks like on Tuesday we get the FHFA Home Prices Index as well as consumer confidence. Wednesday, the big day, of course, the FOMC meeting as well as wholesale inventories. Bit of a packed calendar on Thursday with initial claims, unit labor costs, productivity SAAR, durable orders and factory orders. And rounding out the week on Friday, we'll see PPI and the Chicago PMI results. As you probably already know by now, we do also have content over there on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. If you're interested, just search InvestTalk with 2 T's on YouTube, and that'll pop up with a lot of our content that is just more educational content. Sometimes we have repurposed, repackaged highlights of the show from that week. Sometimes we have learning sessions that are evergreen that you can always go and refer to. But while you're over there, if you got a question, you can certainly leave it in the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel rather than just running over, picking up your phone, and dialing that number that we all know. Now, this question came in a couple days ago, and it says, what are your thoughts on CWEN? The steady dividend growth and potential for growth in wind energy are appealing, but they do carry a large amount of debt. What would be a good entry point? Well, CWEN is Clear Water Energy. It is a diversified portfolio of renewables, so think wind, solar, energy storage, and conventional power generation assets in the United States, mostly under long-term contracts. And so what it's trying to do is exactly what this viewer, Selena Marie, is hinting at, is provide that stability, stable, predictable cash flows. Its dividend yield has been, for lack of a better word, pretty juicy over the past couple years. The average sits, around 4.9%. That's exactly where it is this year. But 2023, dividend yield 5.5%. 2024, its dividend yield was 6.3%. And dividends have grown over time. There are multiple consecutive years of increases. So this really does appeal to somebody who is focusing on dividends. They have high dividend yields in the top quartile of U.S. stocks. Renewable energy and contract growth has certainly been something beneficial for this company as well. Expansion of their contracted renewables. Think large corporations like Google, who are trying to buy more and more energy for their databases. They did beat earnings. That has certainly helped sentiment with this company as well. It's one of the reasons why it's up 39.96% over the past 52 weeks. It outperformed the S&P 500 last year by 11.5%. But let's take a look at that debt, $7.3 billion in debt on an $7.2 billion market cap company. That is certainly a lot of debt on its balance sheet. And, you know, when you start to see interest rates maybe plateau, utility sector valuations maybe shifting, broader energy market trends that may be focused more on traditional sources of power rather than renewables. Well, what could happen here, right? Its valuation sitting at 36.6 times price to forward-looking earnings. That is well above its average of 28, far from its low of 12.3, just slightly below its high of 46. So this is one of the reasons why I say you can't just focus on yield to determine what you want to invest in, because the yield is great, but the valuation is a bit high on this name, especially given the overall trends in the industry. 75% plus is where its payout ratio stands. And so could there be downward pressure on dividends and therefore downward pressure on sentiment? Certainly. It is already in an industry where capital is incredibly expensive. Power generation assets are very capital heavy. Financing costs or policy shifts, i.e. clean energy priorities, certainly this administration does not have that as one of their priorities, can materially affect returns for companies like Clearwater Energy, or Clearway Energy, that is. So for now, in spite of its dividend, and not because of its debt, because, you know, I mean, the debt is a problem, but in terms of where it's being, the amount that's being serviced, it's not as worrisome. More because of its valuation and because of overall trends in the industry, for Clearway Energy, gonna have to pass. Thanks for the call. Or rather, thanks for watching. We're headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now or anytime throughout the show. We got 62 million downloads, and the reason why is you. So give me a call. I look forward to chatting. 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point concerns the silver industrial boom. Now, silver's story in 2025 and into 2026 is a bit of a mix of long history, modern technology, and a market trying to rebalance after years of structural change. The latest data show global silver mine production ticking a bit higher, rising just under 1% of roughly 820 million ounces. That growth came primarily from recoveries, from byproduct mining, rather than major new primary silver discoveries. You have to remember, so much of silver that is mined comes as a byproduct of other minerals. Mexico remained the world's largest silver producer, followed by China, Peru, Bolivia, and Chile, reinforcing how geographically concentrated silver supply can be. Now, a key driver of production growth was the rebound of large operations, alongside stronger output from lead and zinc mining in Australia. Silver, tied to gold mining, showed the fastest growth rate, highlighting how much silver supply depends on broader metals, right? Broader metal cycles, rather than silver prices alone. As the demand for gold, the demand for copper increases, those mining operations tend to also increase the supply of silver, but that dependency can limit how quickly supply can respond when demand changes. It is a recurring theme in the silver market. Recycling provided a bit of a meaningful offset as well. It jumped 6% to its highest level in more than a decade. Higher prices, cost of living pressures, encouraged households and the industry to bring more silver back into the market. Industrial scrap, particularly from chemical catalysts and electronics-related processes, well, that drove most of the recycling increases. And so we talked a bit about the supply, but what about the demand? On the demand side, total silver consumption slipped about 3% to 1.15 billion ounces. That decline wasn't really a collapse. but rather a normalization after unusually strong physical silver investment demand in prior years. The standout again was industrial demand, which set another record and continues to be the backbone of the silver market. You have to understand that is one of the dynamics that makes it so different from gold. Its industrial uses. Solar and clean energy demand remained pretty structurally strong, even as manufacturers worked to reduce the amount of silver that is required per unit. What was another big driver? I bet you guessed it, AI-related applications. It added another incremental source of demand, tying silver more closely to long-term technology trends. Now, of course, there's also jewelry. Jewelry fabrication actually increased modestly. It was driven largely by India, where rural demand and lower import duties helped offset higher prices. Western jewelry demand bit steady. China, however, saw another year of decline. Physical investment demand throughout the year, it softened, right? Particularly in India, as high prices weighed on gifting traditions. Physical investment, which explains much of the headline decline, slipped as well. Taken together, supply growth, softer investment demand, reduced immediate market tightness without eliminating longer-term constraints. The modern market sits on top of a history that stretches back more than 5,000 years. Silver, it helped power ancient economies from Anatolia to Greece to Rome, the Spanish Empire. The discovery of silver in the Americas after 1492 reshaped global trade and monetary systems. Over centuries, innovation steadily expanded production as high-grade ores were depleted. Now, modern mining relies on scale. It relies on technology. It relies on byproduct recovery rather than rich standalone silver veins. That makes silver supply less flexible. It makes it more exposed to shifts in base metals and gold production. And so looking ahead, silver's fundamentals increasingly depend on industrial demand rather than monetary use alone. The metal's long history as money still matters, but its future is being shaped by electrification, its future is being shaped by automation, its future is being shaped by the energy transition. Silver remains a bridge between the ancient and modern economy where structural demand meets an increasingly constrained supply. We are certainly in the full swing of things in 2025, and most of us are still working through some of those New Year's resolutions. We have seen a lot more listeners such as yourselves request portfolio reviews just because it's good to have a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth pair of eyes on our investment portfolios. We can think of things that you certainly may not have, and so it can be a very, very valuable resource for those serious investors who are looking to take the next step. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Don't forget, it's free, it's confidential, and we can't wait to speak with you. On the next Invest Talk, we're going to dig into this story, the forever renter economy. Despite stabilizing, home ownership rates for younger demographics have hit new lows. We'll talk all about it, and we'll analyze the rise of build-to-rent communities and the long-term economic shift away from ownership. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Lou Guerrero, and I am ready, willing, and able to take your finance and investment questions. We got plenty still to come from our voicemails, but we'd love to hear from you live, so give me a call now. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about parallel investing? Parallel investing differentiates KPP Financial because it aligns the interests of KPP principals with those of their clients as they each share the same risks and potential for success.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest529 account today. Go to Invest529.com to get started.
Success. Learn more anytime at InvestTalk.com. Just click on Portfolio Review.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Tyler in Los Angeles. I have some cash in my IRA to invest, and I'm looking to finally get some exposure to gold. Currently, I have no exposure to precious metals, so this would be about 10% of my overall retirement portfolio. The intent would be this would be a long-term hold, 10 years. Currently looking at 3 ETFs and was hoping to get your thoughts on them. The first is GLDM. The second is IAUM. And lastly, SGOL. Of the 3, do you prefer one over the other? And then would it make sense for me to purchase more than one of these ETFs, or are they all identical enough that I could put the entirety of my gold exposure in just one of them? Thank you, as always, for any input and perspective. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the podcast.
Take a look at these 3 tickers. That's GLDM, which is the Spider Gold Mini Shares Trust, IAUM, which is the iShares Gold Trust Micro ETF, and SGOL, which is a physical gold shares ETF. Now, when you're taking a look at things like this, where they give you similar exposure, there's a couple things that you really care about, right? You care about your expense ratio. IAUM typically has the lowest expense ratio among the 3. Sits at about 9 basis points, whereas I think GLDM has the second lowest, and that's at about 10 basis points. So very similar there, but every basis point down the road matters. SGOL, slightly higher, right? SGOL's expense ratio sits about 17. So honestly, between that, I'd probably kick out SGOL off the bat. Now, next, you care about liquidity. You care about size. Liquidity matters for trade execution. It matters for tighter spreads when you're actually looking to buy in and redeem from that ETF. GLDM is larger than IAUM and generally has a bit better liquidity than SGOL and IAUM does. So because of that, right, IAUM has a smaller asset size, but liquidity is still fine there. You have no problem getting in and out. All 3 ETFs do actually hold the physical bullion. That's something you want to make sure of when you are taking a look at these ETFs. Are they doing it through financial wizardry, if you will, through futures products, or do they hold the physical gold? That being said, all 3 are accessible. If your primary concern is liquidity because of massive trade size, I would probably go for GLDM. But because I imagine that you're not putting a ridiculous amount of money into this ETF in nominal terms, I think if you're cost conscious, IAUM is the way to go. Thanks for the call. Let's make it 2 in a row. This one came in earlier to the InvestTalk Voice Bank.
Hey, I was trying to reach Justin or Luke. I'm calling about the following ticker symbol, GGG. That's Graco Incorporated. I've held this stock for a while, and I saw that it's just fallen. I went ahead and picked up a few more shares of it. I'm curious if you could check the fundamentals on this. How does this stock look going forward? Big fan of the show. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
GGG is Graco Inc. It is a U.S. industrial manufacturer. What they do is they specialize in fluid handling systems and equipment for, think, the industrial space through processes, through pumps, sprayers, valves, automotive, construction, coating, chemicals, really all across the board. Now, it's a $14 billion, roughly $14.6 billion market cap company. It has very little debt, only about $12 million in debt as of 2025. Valuation, though, been on the expensive side, slightly above its 5-year average, sitting at 27.1 times right now versus its 5-year average of 26.7. So a bit high, but not egregiously high compared to where it's been. Now, year to date, it's up just under 6% at 5.84%. But let's take a look at why this has been the case, right? It is more of a stable industrial play with pretty solid, not high, but steady dividends. The dividends range from 90 basis points to 1.4% over the past 5 years. So if you're looking for steady, predictable cash flows, this certainly could be the type of company that is for you. There has been a good history of share repurchases. They authorized a new share repurchase program. They raised their quarterly dividend recently. That's certainly a boon to stock prices and can help with returns down the road. But, I mean, recent earnings have been a bit mixed. Earnings per share has been kind of all over the place relative to its relative to predicted levels, and that can certainly weigh down on asset prices as well. Overall, I mean, I consider this probably at a range where I would maybe looking to add slowly, waiting for a bit of a dip here. Its momentum isn't very strong, right? It's been relatively flat over the past couple years. I mean, 2024, it was down roughly 3%. 2025, it's down roughly 3%. 2026, it's only up about 5.8%. And so for me, it's a bit expensive where it's sitting. Fundamentally, the company is fine. If you're looking for predictable cash flows, certainly a good thing. But revenue growth has slowed. Overall, I think for now, I would probably keep Graco Inc. on my watch list. That is ticker GGG. Thanks for the call. Debt is a big, big part of the economy. And frankly, global growth, it's being propped up less by consumers or businesses and more by governments tearing up old budget rules and continuing to spend incredibly aggressively. Across the US, across Europe, across Asia, large fiscal stimulus packages financed by widening deficits are stepping in to, in a way, offset what we've seen as weak private demand and repeated economic shocks. JP Morgan estimates this wave of public spending could lift global growth to a 3% annual pace over the next 6 months, and that could boost jobs, certainly in the short term, but has risks in the long term. The strategy's risky because it's unfolding at a time of low unemployment and still elevated interest rates, meaning that any massive debt burdens could amplify financial stress, and the payoff isn't really there. You're not trying to tame unemployment. Now, Japan has offered a bit of an early warning signal when bond yields surged after the prime minister unveiled new spending and tax cuts, sending ripples through the global bond market. You can see this, these market reactions, as a symptom of deeper vulnerabilities, including weak productivity growth, including heavy reliance on government stimulus. Outside of Japan, in the US, in Germany, fiscal policy alone is expected to add about 1 percentage point to growth this year, while Japan's boost is closer to 0.5%. China is pushing even harder, even further, running a budget deficit near 9% of GDP for a second year as it leans on public spending to counter the structural and external pressures that are ailing its economy. Governments are spending to confront overlapping challenges from AI-driven disruption to trade wars to military rearmament, energy transitions, aging populations, putting band-aids on issues rather than solving them. Unlike past cycles, leaders are avoiding tax increases. They're letting deficits swell, with average government shortfalls far larger than they were a decade ago. And frankly, bond markets have not yet punished this approach the way they did during past debt crises, partly because inflation has eroded debt burdens and austerity has lost political appeal. Still, rising interest costs are a growing concern, and economists are justifiably warning that if investor confidence cracks, or growth, more importantly, disappoints, today's stimulus could be tomorrow's problem. Here comes another listener question now from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Neil from Chicago. Thanks for taking my call. Really appreciate your show. I had a question about Brunswick Corporation, ticker symbol BC. These are the guys who manufacture and sell boats, all the recreational marine stuff. What are your thoughts about this company? Do you think it's fairly valued? I do own some of them. Should I be adding to my position? Or what do you think? What is the answer on the show?
Brunswick Corporation, ticker BC, designs, manufactures, markets recreational marine products, including boat engines, boats, parts, accessories, and anything really related to marine technologies through a couple of its major brands, particularly Boston Whaler and Mercury Marine. It's a $5.7 billion market cap company. It has about $2.2 billion in debt as of the end of 2024. And relative to the market, I mean, it's moved pretty dramatically so far this year, up 19.14% in the past 3 months, up 15.4% year to date. Revenue is up about 5% on an annualized basis going back to 2020, but it did hit a peak coming out of the pandemic when a lot of people had a lot of money to spend that they otherwise were not spending. Now, because of this price increase, its current valuation is sitting near its five-year high. The average is 11.2. The high is 21.1. The low is 5.8. Its price to earnings is sitting at 20.3 right now. Price to book at 3.5. Price to cash flow, 7.7 times. Now, what has really driven its stock is results from strong demand, from market share gain in the marine retail space, particularly in its Florida region, and overall signaled confidence in the broad consumer boating market. They also, in a way, emphasize a bit of innovation through their engines, through their electronics. They've showcased new products that have driven a lot of interest from analysts. But profitability has been mixed. Net margins have kind of been all over the place. They hit a peak in 2021 at 10.2%, down to 4.9%, where it's projected to be in 2026. EBITDA margins fallen from 17.3, projected to fall to 12.7 by the end of this year. And it is in a historically cyclical area of the market. Even though its brands are some of the most recognizable brands in the recreational boating space, you cannot argue with the fact that this stock has run up a bit over the past 3 months and has put itself in a place where if growth falls, you can be in a bad position. It also falls under my rule of not buying anything within 2 weeks of earnings, as positions have been taken to jockey for earnings announcements. It can be incredibly volatile. So for now, I'd take a wait. I'd wait and see what happens on January 29th when they come out with earnings. Certainly the price could surge, but the risk, the volatility risk, is heightened anytime earnings announcements occur. That is Brunswick Corporation, ticker BC. Looks like we got plenty of time before our next break, so why don't we answer another voicemail question now?
Thanks for everything you do on the show. I have a question about Old Dominion Freight Lines. I recently picked up some shares. I was just wondering if you're seeing anything negative in the news. What's the outlook for this company? Just wondering what your take is at this current level. Thanks very much. Bye.
Old Dominion Freight Lines, ticker ODFL, is one of the leading U.S. less-than-truckload freight carriers. So they provide national, regional, and expedited freight services through a large service center network and has for a really long time been widely regarded by analysts for their great pricing discipline, their strong margins, and for those who use their business for their incredible efficiency. Its return on equity has been upwards of 20% for the past 5 years, peaking in 2022 at about 37.6%, falling down to about 23.2% this upcoming year. Now, because of these margins, right, it's EBITDA margin around 32.9% for a transportation industry, transportation company, who's going to be heavily tied to the cost of fuel. That's pretty impressive. There's a reason why it's trading at 34.4 times price to forward-looking earnings, just above its average of 29.4. Now, it is a pretty large company, $36.6 billion market cap. It's got virtually no debt and $133 million in debt. And so, how has this been performing? Well, 2024 was weak, underperformed the S&P by 36, underperformed its industry by 9. It was down 13%. 2025 was rough, underperformed the S&P by 27.5, underperformed the industry by 3.2. It was down 11.1%. For the past couple of years before that, I mean, performance was solid. And this year, performance has been pretty good as well, up 10.96% year to date, up 27.82% over the past 3 months. Their revenue, their profitability is understandably going to be tied to the specific niche area of freight that they carry. So periods of weaker freight demand or softer tonnage metrics, they can weigh pretty heavily on this stock, even if service rates remain disciplined. There's also been a decent amount of volatility year over year in revenue growth. hit a peak in December 2022, haven't quite clawed their way back. In fact, revenue has been falling. Now, that trend may be reversing here, but it may be reversing. This is early in the year. It's certainly going to be based upon estimates. Now, price action has recently showed a bit of a bounce from late year lows and trading near the higher end of its range, but it's still a bit expensive. I would say if you're holding a position, I don't see any reason to sell immediately, but I'd be hesitant to enter a new position here, given some of the cyclical demand issues and given how much the price has run up in the past 3 months and where that's pushed valuations. This is also a name, going to have earnings February 4th. Going to be interesting to see the results relative to the estimates. That is Old Dominion Freight Line, ticker ODFL. This is Invest Talk. I'm Lou Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that goal each and every day is to help you achieve your financial freedom by educating you and helping you become a better and more informed investor. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So if you got that burning question on your mind that cannot wait until tomorrow's show, pick up that phone, dial 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got a live call. Nick from Hayward, you got a question about Netflix?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hi, Luke. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you very much. Great show. Yeah, let me know. I have some shares of it, and I'm thinking about adding to my position, and what your opinion as to, is this a good time, or do you think?
Yeah, let's take a look at Netflix. Netflix, of course, the massive, massive streaming company.
Right.
And there's a bit of a big deal out on the horizon, right? Trying to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, though. There is also a competing bid that is from Paramount. And since the announcement of the merger, Netflix stock has been trading a bit down. Back in July of 2025, it reached its local high of about $130 a share. And it has since been a downward climb to about $85.70. Now, originally, the proposed transaction was going to be a little bit of cash and a little bit of stock. But after Paramount came in and said, okay, we'll offer all cash, Netflix has since done the same. I think about $82.7 billion is where the projected cost of this is going to be at $27.75 a share. Now, anytime you have companies that are involved in merger activity, it becomes a bit of a risk here, right? There's a lot of heightened risk for this company. Historically speaking, more than 50% of mergers do not actually do well in the 3 years after a deal has been completed. The reason being is you don't really know what the synergies are going to be until you start working in a singular entity. There's a lot of execution risk out there as well. There's also a bit of a political element in this transaction as well. The Ellison family being involved in Paramount, certainly a close relationship with the Trump administration, and word today that there are Congress people who want to look into the antitrust component of the Netflix deal. So given everything that's out there, given the heightened risk, I'm not sure that I'd be wanting to add more into my portfolio of Netflix. That is NFLX. Thanks for the call. Before we head off, wanted to talk a little bit about gold, which breached $5,000 an ounce today. And because investors are kind of facing a mix of lower bond yields, of lofty stock valuations, of geopolitical turbulence, it's kind of converged into the same response here. You buy gold as a form of financial insurance. Just 3 months after breaking through 4,000 an ounce, gold surged past 5,000 an ounce today. And frankly, that would have seemed a bit implausible if you asked me a year and a half ago. The major driver is this so-called debasement trade, where investors fear that inflation, rising debt, political interference will steadily erode the value of major currencies, specifically the U.S. dollar. The president's aggressive posture from Venezuela to trade threats to public pressure on the Fed has amplified those fears and weakened confidence in the dollar's long-term stability. It's why you've seen this historic drawdown in the dollar's worth. Gold's rally accelerated earlier this year as tariffs battered the dollar and continued after the Fed signaled rate cuts despite inflation still running above target. Lower interest rates have reinforced this move, since falling yields on treasuries and cash reduce the opportunity cost of holding a metal that offers no income but potentially significant upside. With roughly $7.7 trillion still parked in money market funds, even a small reallocation towards gold could have an outsized effect on prices. Adding to demand are central banks, which have become persistent buyers since the global financial crisis and sharply increased purchases after Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. Many emerging market and non-Western central banks are shifting reserves away from dollar assets into gold, which cannot be frozen or sanctioned by the U.S. government. At the same time, soaring stock prices, well, they're making investors uneasy. Valuation measures suggesting equities are more expensive than at almost any point in the past century. Concerns are especially acute around mega-cap tech companies, whose dominance means any reversal could ripple quickly through global markets. Finally, momentum itself is reinforcing the rally, as history shows that strong gold advances often persist for years, encouraging investors to chase gains rather than step aside. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes or Spotify. Also, while you're at it, why don't you go over to our YouTube channel, Invest Talk with Two T's, and check out our YouTube content. As always, if today's show made you think about your investment, your taxes, your retirement, anything at all, and you want another set of eyes, at KPP Financial, we offer free, no-cost, confidential portfolio reviews, and through all of our investment strategies, practice parallel investing. In short, parallel investing differentiates KPP because it aligns the interest of KPP with our clients. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com to learn more. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.